Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Supreme Court handed down the Dreamers ruling today, and in a 5-4 ruling with John Roberts joining the liberal group, they ruled that the Trump administration cannot end protections for Dreamers. And we thought, given that this is the time of year that the Supreme Court comes up with all of its biggest rulings, and there are a few more to go, we invited David Schultz, a constitutional law professor at Hamline University in Minnesota, to join us today to talk a little bit about the Supreme Court docket and what's going on. David, welcome to WGN Radio.
Thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it.
It's very nice to have you. So today's ruling is a big deal, isn't it?
It is a big deal. Now, let's explain what was going on here, because Obama, when he was president, issued a ruling that applied to the Dreamers that would allow them to stay in the United States. It was not a path to citizenship, but basically not enforcing a law against or trying to deport them. When the Trump administration took over, they tried to repeal that rule. And what the Supreme Court said today, and for people like me who teach constitutional law and administrative law, it's wonderful because this is really nerdy. What they said is that, and you'll see why, is they said that the reason why the Trump administration can't do this is they didn't follow the proper procedures for changing Obama's executive order and changing the rule. This is all about administrative law. And what they said is that when the Trump administration issued this rule repealing, called, you know, DACA, they acted arbitrarily and capriciously in not considering certain factors, including the impact that the repeal of that rule would have upon approximately, 90,000, if not more, individuals who would be affected by it. So it's really all about this decision saying that the Trump administration didn't follow the proper process for how to get rid of that rule.
So, in other words,
if that makes sense.
Sure. So there's processes and procedures for the almost 800,000 Dreamers that we know about. It's interesting that they didn't follow rules and procedures, though, given that the Trump administration has issued so many executive rulings of their own, haven't they?
They have, but this has been one of the interesting stories of the Trump administration, that if we look at a range of different areas, for example, let's say environmental law, now immigration and a couple of others, the Trump administration has fared actually fairly badly in the federal courts, because there's this thing out there called the Administrative Procedures Act that basically outlines the process when agencies like, Immigration and Natural Services or the Environmental Protection Agency or whomever. It outlines a process for how they can issue administrative rules or repeal them. And the rules are quite specific. And the Trump administration has, I think a nice way of saying it here, has not always been exact in terms of following those procedures and rules. And the federal courts have actually overturned many of their actions. And so this case today is very similar to a pattern that we've seen where perhaps had the Trump administration gone through proper procedure, proper process, held the hearings, it could get what it wants. But the fact that the president issues an executive order, an agency says, make it so, the courts are coming back and saying, no, you can't do that. You've got to follow certain rules.
But what you're saying then in different words is that the Trump administration could redo this fairly easily.
It could redo it easily is maybe a little bit more difficult, because you have to follow procedure. And a lot of times this requires doing things such as putting out notice, holding hearings, gathering information, and that's time consuming. And I would say that generally, I'm going to do a rough categorization. It could take a couple of years to repeal and go through the process to change a major rule like this. And so assuming, let's say, for example, he were to get a second term, he has a chance to do that. If he doesn't get a second term as president, then we don't know, of course, what's going to happen. It's unlikely that he could do anything between now and January 20th.
So another big ruling that was handed down this week is the LGBT protections ruling, and that was a surprise. So Roberts joined the more liberal wing of the court today, but we also saw Roberts join in this ruling as well. Let's talk about that one, because that was also, I think, a huge win that maybe people were not expecting.
Yeah, that was one that was interesting because there were some of us, you know, like me, I thought maybe 5-4 one way or the other, thinking that the four liberals, the four conservatives are split. Justice Roberts is in the middle. I could have seen it go either way. But what became even more surprising in that case was Neil Gorsuch, who was Donald Trump's first appointment to the U.S. Supreme Court, wrote the majority opinion on that one. And in what that case really said is that the word sex, that's the word that's in the 1964 Civil Rights Act, the word sex, in its ordinary understanding of the term, is broad enough to include discrimination against gays, lesbians, bisexuals, transsexuals. And it was just a very fascinating opinion just in terms of how they tried to decipher words. But also, you're right, the political alignment. And one of the things that Justice Roberts has been very concerned about as Chief Justice is protecting the independence or the integrity of the court so that it doesn't look like they're just a bunch of politicians with robes on. And remember, a couple years ago, when Trump was criticizing the Supreme Court, Roberts pushes back. And so what we're seeing now is an interesting pattern where Roberts, you know, in two opinions this week, you know, obviously today's DACA case, the LGBTQ case the other day, is that Roberts is this new swing justice in some ways, and he has now swung twice in one week in the direction of the liberals. And what will be interesting to see is that we've got, you know, at least three other major cases coming down the line that I think were, you know, that are going to be of interest. The biggest one for some people is going to be on Trump's taxes. There's three cases there, all about whether or not a state, a grand jury, or Congress can get access to Trump's taxes. There is a major abortion case that's coming out, and then there's what's called the faithless electors case, whether or not a person who's an elector for the Electoral College, you know, for the presidential election, has to vote the way the state tells them. And so these are going to be interesting cases, but especially the tax and the abortion one are going to be interesting cases for Roberts because he's probably the swing justice on both of those.
So let's talk a little bit about that abortion ruling, which, you know, I imagine that we've had our big ruling for today and we're not going to get another one. It's almost like they're doling them out piecemeal just to, I don't know what. But let's talk about what that case is about, because I think there is some misconceptions. And of course, they try to draw these rulings very narrowly. So this is not, they're not making huge law of the land.
Well, you're absolutely correct. What it's about is that right now, just to remind people, the Supreme Court has said that women have a right to terminate their pregnancies through abortion, but states still have the authority to be able to regulate some of the, let's say, the conditions surrounding that therapy in order to protect the health of the mother. And so, you know what they're trying to say in that opinion is that we don't want to just let sort of like, you know, Sam's, I don't know, auto repair shop and you know, abortion clinic, you know, do whatever. You know, so there's a legitimate public health issue here. But on the other hand, the court has said that you can't use protection of health, or you can't use medical regulation as a way to provide or to impose an undue burden upon a woman's right to terminate a pregnancy. And the case that's coming up here now is whether or not the state of Louisiana, in requiring doctors to have certain admitting privileges to hospitals, is that basically imposing an undue burden upon a woman's right to terminate a pregnancy. And so this is going to test, I think, on a variety of different issues here, how far again, a right to an abortion women have, and B, we're going to get our first picture at this point regarding how the two new Trump appointees, Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, are going to rule on this issue. And again, it's going to come down to the same thing. Where will Roberts go? Will he vote with the liberals or will he go with the conservatives?
So we should point out, and correct me if I'm wrong, that in 2016, the court voted 5-3 on a very similar law from Texas. And then correct. Justice Anthony Kennedy, who's now retired, voted with the court's more liberal side of it. It is more conservative, but, you know, this is a reaffirmation that you know, this case basically is an echo case, isn't it? Or is it so different in some ways? And then I also want you to talk about that undue burden part, because if the Louisiana prevails and if the conservative bloc goes through and they approve this, doesn't this just eliminate the last abortion provider in Louisiana?
Yeah, I'll start with that first. Essentially, yes, it'll shut down, I think, all the clinics that are providing abortions. And one of the things that's important to understand is that the difference between being able to go to a clinic to get an abortion versus, let's say, a full-line surgical hospital, the cost is thousands of dollars in difference. And that clearly imposes, you know, at least in my opinion, you know, significant burdens
Absolutely.
Upon women. Of course it does. Right. So yes, in some ways, this case out of Louisiana is really an echo of the Texas case. But given the fact that Kennedy had retired, replaced now by two justices, there are many people who sense that perhaps the court has now tipped far enough and they can get the kind of ruling they want. If the court were to say that this is not an undue burden, that Louisiana gets to do what it wants to do, not only does it close clinics, but it opens up potentially even more laws that can potentially put more obstacles in the place of women. Because the whole phrase undue burden, I don't know about you, I have no idea what that phrase means. It's a really bad choice of words that I think Justice O'Connor came up with, you know, a generation ago, in terms of saying, you know, when something okay versus burden versus undue burden, you know, like that. But clearly, this case will give us a better picture regarding the scope of how far the court's going to allow states in terms of acting. And I suspect there are at least four justices who I think are going to be willing to uphold Louisiana law, and at least a few of them who want to overturn Roe versus Wade. I don't think Roberts is going to go that far. I think Roberts will probably find some way to finesse it. If I really had to, he really wanted to press me on this one, I think he's going to probably rule against Louisiana. But I'm not completely willing to bet the last dollar in my wallet on that one.
It's interesting because, you know, the more conservative justices have said that they always look to precedent. And it would seem that just 2016, you know, ruling against a very similar echo case would be a precedent that they would not want to overturn. There's lots of precedents in this particular area about this. And, you know, when you talk about politicians in robes, you know, overturning precedent because you happen to be personally against the idea of abortion does seem unfortunate.
It does. And I think you make a good point here. This is not supposed to be about what I as a justice personally think. It's supposed to be still about what? About what the laws, what the Constitution says, and about precedent. Go back to 1991, famous case, Planned Parenthood versus Casey, where people thought at that point the Supreme Court was going to overturn Roe. And Justice Kennedy, O'Connor, and Souter made, I think, a very good argument. And they said that they weren't going to overturn Roe and it's in place. And what they argued is to say, at that point, remember, this is, you know, 20 years ago, they said a generation of women had come of age relying upon the belief that they had control over their bodies and could terminate a pregnancy if they needed to do so. I think that concept of reliance women's interest is very powerful. The women who are listening, I'm going to say their boyfriends, their husbands, et cetera, I think we now have at least two generations of people who have grown up with the idea that what women should have a right to be able to terminate their pregnancies, and for the court now to say, well, because I'm Catholic or I'm another faith or I don't like it or something like that, especially in light of a decision 5 years ago, that seems to be kind of what that politician with robes kind of aspect.
So let's turn now to the faithless electors thing, because here we are. This is a very, very big. They're all big presidential elections, but this feels just like a very big one, particularly. So,
sure.
This case is about, you go and you place your, I think everybody knows this, right? You go and you vote, and your vote, isn't really the winning vote, right? There, you have to actually.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about why this case now has come up before the Supreme Court on whether electors actually have to follow the state vote.
Sure. Just for everybody to know that the Constitution does not give us the right to vote for president. When we go to vote in November, we are voting to cast for a slate of electors who are picked by a presidential candidate who will vote for that person if they win the state. If that sounds complex, it is. But essentially, it's the Electoral College. It's 538 people who actually get to vote for President of the United States. And the original idea for the Electoral College is to give these electors broad discretion to make good choices for the United States. Many states have laws in place that say that you as an elector must cast your vote for the way that the state has told you to vote. There's a case coming out of both Washington and out of Colorado where a person who was an elector wanted to cast a ballot differently than the state, was told they couldn't vote, and has challenged it. And this is an important case because it's about the freedom or delegation of how electors are going to vote. Why it's important this year, most of the polls are suggesting that the Electoral College is going to be very, very close. Let's imagine the scenario where if there are faithless electors, which we've seen in the past, where they've voted differently than how they were pledged by the state or told by the state, what if one, two, three of them vote in a different way? That could be enough to throw the election from one candidate to another. I know in one model that I've generated, and some people generated similar models for the Electoral College, it's within just a few electoral votes in terms of whether it's going to be Biden or Trump at this point. So letting, let's say, an elector in Illinois vote a different way than pledged could be enough to switch an election.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how they rule on this case, because this is it's a political case, but it's not like you can say, well, the conservative justices, are definitely going to vote one way or another. This could be an all or nothing situation. And I think we're going to just have to sort of see how it goes. We just have 10 seconds left, but any way that you think it's good, you want to call it either way?
I think the court is going to let the states win on this one.
All right, then we will wait and see and have you back to talk about it. David Schultz is a constitutional law professor at Hamline University in Minnesota. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us today about the Supreme Court. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.